Here's the GM of the Blue Jays, Ross Atkins. How you doing, Ross?
I'm doing all right, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you for doing
this. Topic you guys kicked off with.
Well, yeah, I guess I'll throw that at you. If you were invited to the White House, what would you expect to be on the menu?
Oh man, on the menu. Yeah, I mean, I probably wouldn't have guessed Burger King. I wouldn't have been my first guess.
No, McDonald's, Wendy's, Burger King.
Even if you're courting like a free agent or something, you're flying his family.
That's right.
His family and wife and kids. Like, I guess would McDonald's not be front and center?
How does that work with the courting process? Do you do like Harbor 60 when you're showing them Toronto? What's the plan here for the Jays?
Well, it all depends on the player, right? You know, you got to do the reconnaissance. You got to know what they like, but yeah, there's definitely an aspect of recruiting that does matter. It's there's nothing more powerful than, you know, dollars and winning environments in the end. And you know, we'll be fortunate to have both of those in the coming days.
With Ross Atkins, GM of the Jays, before we get to the stuff that you guys are specifically involved in with your club, I want to ask you about probably the biggest story in baseball right now pertaining to Kyler Murray. And obviously he's an Oakland Athletics pick, and now he has declared he's going to go into the NFL draft. That doesn't mean he's not going to be playing baseball in the future. But in terms of your own philosophy with the draft, and I guess specifically if you've run into this with first-round picks, how have you historically handled dual-sport athletes when it comes to the baseball draft?
You know, one of the biggest challenges, especially for someone playing at a program in the NCAA as big as the program that Kyler Murray was a part of and getting the attention that he was getting, is then, you know, going to play in Dunedin, Florida, in front of 100 to 500 people, riding on buses that aren't nearly as nice, and that staying in hotels that aren't nearly as nice as those that you would be staying in as a college football athlete, and, you know, being potentially 2 to 4 years away from being in that major league environment is such a big challenge. And how you weigh how a player will handle that all comes down to your area scout's knowledge of the player. So, you know, you ultimately can't place a value on that and just how well that you know a player, what motivates them, what's going to happen when things are hard and difficult, and understanding that, and then ultimately, evaluate them as a baseball player and try to separate that out. So it's an incredible situation to be in for Kyler Murray, and it's one that I don't think anyone wouldn't love to be in, to have an opportunity like that, to be that special of a talent. So we'll certainly be intriguing and interesting moving forward.
On Friday, you guys obviously made a trade. You avoided arbitration with a lot of your guys, but the biggest news item was Russell Martin being traded to the Dodgers for a couple of minor league players, and you guys are going to eat a lot of that contract, a lot of the money that's remaining on the deal. We all spoke throughout the season last year and into September towards the end of the year, specifically about the role of a guy like Martin, who wasn't being utilized much in September. He didn't play a lot. Danny Jansen came up, stepped in, played well. But take us through the thought process here in terms of Russell Martin and why you decided that, you know, it didn't make sense to keep him around as kind of a veteran presence, a guy who can play all over the diamond if need be, and it made more sense to move on from him.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, you can't say anything but just, you know, incredible things about Russ and what he's meant to this organization, the impact that he had on the team, on the city, on the country. He is one of the toughest individuals I've been around. And I said that to him when we traded him, and he's also exceptionally bright. His instincts are incredible. What he's been able to do as a catcher throughout his career is remarkable. A lot of people, before his free agent contract, you know, were leery of what that would mean, the wear and tear, and he has handled it so well. And that's what speaks to his toughness. So, you know, why is, and on the veteran leadership front, you know, we feel like we actually have a solid group of veterans in Kendrys Morales and Justin Smoak, Kevin Pillar, Aaron Sanchez and Marcus Stroman are growing into those roles. Ultimately, it comes down to being on the field to have that significant of a presence. There are the rare Jason Giambis and Carlos Beltrans at the end of their career where they can make an impact for potentially a year as a role player, as a bench player, but that's hard to do. So when playing time is decreased, it's hard to really be that veteran presence. It's just it's few and far between. So we're, as I said, we're confident about some of the leaders that we do have in the clubhouse. And, you know, ultimately there was a part of it that was playing time driven for, you know, Danny Jansen and Reese McGuire and Luke Maley. And the other part of it is us getting some return. So, you know, we're excited about the two young players that are coming to our organization, and Sopko and Brito. And we can't have enough depth, and we've continued to add depth to our system. I think we've added since the deadline well over 10 pitchers at the upper levels since the trade deadline. And this offseason, we've added six of those. We've had to subtract a couple of position players to get them. But they were in areas that we do feel like we had some depth. To turn that into pitching has been our goal, and we'll continue to look to add and build around it.
Ross, we talk a lot on this show on organizations that are struggling and, you know, trying to turn things around. What do you think is the reasonable timeline? Or I don't even know if there is one, because some teams try to do it and they don't do it. But, you know, you're getting younger, you're moving older pieces out. What do you think is a reasonable timeline where the Jays can be competitive once again?
Yeah, you know, it's like, why limit it and why put it out too far, right, is what I would say. So, I've been on the record as saying, is it one, is it two, is it 3 years? If it's more, we're in trouble. You know, so if it takes more, because we've had a couple of tough years, this market, this city, this country demands a winning environment, and we're confident that we'll have one relatively soon. And I, to take that out, to take this year out of the equation, I don't think is smart. And at the same time, to say, we think realistically it's going to be in 2 or 3 years. The reality of it is we're just pushing to make that as soon as humanly possible.
Well, how do you juggle with the turnover here, where a lot of veterans have made their way out over the past 12 to 18 months, and now there's younger guys who we presume are going to step in and walk onto the roster and play? But how do you make sure that there's still internal competition? Are you anxious at all, or is there any trepidation about just, quote-unquote, handing these, you know, roster spots over to guys? A guy like Danny Jansen, who had a great September, but is he going to walk in and catch 100 games, 110 games? I mean, how do you intend on obviously getting playing time for these young players, but making sure that they're earning it at the same time?
Well, that strikes a chord. I mean, we couldn't agree with you more, and that they have to earn it, and we feel as though Danny Jansen has. If you look at his performance, it suggests he should be playing at a higher level for how the period of time that he performed in AAA and how he's taken on to the leadership role. He's ready for the next challenge. And supporting him with Luke Maley and Reese McGuire could be in that mix and fold at some point and somehow, we feel is a very, very good starting point. Now, you know, if one or two or three of those guys aren't performing, we'll have to make an adjustment. We're, you know, at the major leagues, there's always some level of development for young players coming to the major leagues. They will improve, and hopefully they will always continue to take that mindset that they have to continue to improve. But ultimately, we can't just roll out someone that's not capable of holding a job. So, you know, they all know that. They all realize that they have to perform, and that's what, you know, ultimately drives this game.
How does it apply to the rotation going into this season, where last year, you know, you guys didn't have really anyone that racked up high limit, you know, innings? Hap would have been there if he didn't deal him. He probably would have hit 160, 170. I haven't looked at his numbers recently. But a lot of your guys, you know, because of the turnover in the rotation and injuries and lack of performance, didn't really get that opportunity to go out there every fifth day. But specifically with the kids that we saw at times, like Baraki and Pannone and Reed Foley, what's the plan going into camp with them, and what do they have to do to prove that they should be on the starting roster?
Yeah, I mean, I would say just related to that is we have, for the first time since I've been here, we have 20 pitchers above double A or double A and above that have starting potential and for the major league. So with a rotation starting with Stroman and Sanchez, some combination of the names you just mentioned and Shoemaker and Richard, AAA rotation potentially, that depending on who makes our team, with some of the names you mentioned, other names you haven't mentioned, and Trent Thornton, Sam Gavilio, TJ Zoik, Hector Perez, Wagisback that we traded for, Copping that we traded for, Sopko that we just traded for, guys we've added to our roster, and Yancy Diaz and Patrick Murphy, trading for Julian Merriweather. These guys have put the ball over the plate. They have swing and miss. Most of them have very good walk rates, meaning they don't walk a ton of guys. And listen, one or two of those guys is going to turn into a solid number two or three starter. Hopefully one or two of them turns into a number one. Several of them are going to turn into solid number three and four starters. And we're going to have great stories out of that group. And it really starts with having depth.
Well, pitchers and catchers in about a month. It's creeping real, real close here. And
Bryce Harper's still out there. Come on now.
That's true. What's up with Harper? You guys making calls or what?
He would fit well in between Bichette and Vladdy at some point. There's no question. He's an intriguing player.
Well, but in all honesty, though, why not? Like, he's 26 years old. You know, I know you guys are on a different timeline and money's going out as opposed to coming in. But it's not like he's a 33, 34-year-old. He's going to be a part of a core for the next decade. Why not even contemplate the idea of signing Bryce Harper?
Well, believe me, there we spend time and energy on it, and your point definitely, it makes sense. There's no doubt about it.
All right.
Basically, you're saying you want to sign him and someone told you to go stuff it, is what you're saying.
No, that's certainly not what I was saying. It's something that we've contemplated, we'll continue to, and it's there's a lot of talent that will be able to help our organization moving forward, and we'll continue to consider all of our alternatives.
All right, we'll see where it goes. Yeah. Always appreciate you taking time. Thank you, Ross.
All right, guys, thanks for having me on.
There's Ross Atkins, GM of the Jays.